Hello, welcome to Charity Chat. I'm your host, Samuel Davies. In this episode, we speak with Emma Brace-Girdle, friend of the show and founder of The Saltways, who we spoke with back in episode 262 of the podcast about ethical content creation and the importance of it in telling authentic and sensitive stories. In this episode, we speak with Emma about her experience of running thankathons and what charities should consider before doing this themselves and how it can help improve supporter retention and increase a sense of loyalty and desire to give. So without further ado, here is Emma Brace-Girdle speaking about thankathons. I'm delighted to be joined by Emma Brace-Girdle, friend of the show and founder of The Saltways. Emma, welcome back to Charity Chat.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be back again.
Emma, we spoke back in episode 262 of the podcast about ethical content creation and the importance of it in telling authentic and sensitive stories. Can you remind our listeners about what this type of content looks like, perhaps with a couple of recent examples?
Yeah, sure. So I think ethical content creation for me is really at its core is putting the interests of the person whose story is being told or who you're creating content with at the heart of everything that you do. So making them central to the decisions and putting their interests first rather than the interests of the organization. So how that might look if I talk about a couple of examples of films we've worked on recently. I guess at two different ends of the scale. So we recently have been working with an organization and they wanted to create a film that highlighted how they help people who have an illness and they've worked in the electrical industry. So it's called the Electrical Industries Charity. And the other way around that we do it, I think, which is important, is that instead of finding someone that you think, oh, this person's going to be great on camera, and we've got this campaign coming up, so let's ask them loads of questions about this campaign. That might not feel authentic when it actually comes to it, because that person might not have any experiences or be able to talk about that in an authentic way because they haven't experienced that. So what we tend to do is we spend a lot of time with the charity beforehand asking them, you know, what's the messaging, who's the audience, what do you want to communicate in this film? And then we find people that can bring that to life in an authentic way. So it's kind of flipping it around the other way. Mm-hmm. So we found a couple who had been through something horrendous and this charity was a lifeline for them. But instead of it being, you know, we're going to go and film them and they're going to talk about this and we're just going to ask some questions. We spent a lot of time with them beforehand, which this is part of the ethical content creation, asking them lots of questions, talking them through the process, getting their really full informed consent before we even started filming. So, you know, in those conversations beforehand, we were really explaining how the film was going to be used, where it was going to be shown, what impact it was going to have. And then even the actual filming, we asked them, you know, where do you want to be filmed? And this particular couple didn't want to be filmed at home. So we hired an Airbnb. So it looked like their home, but, you know, it wasn't their actual home. And then we, you know, talked them through what was going to happen on the day. We spent a lot of time with them. So even though the film's only, I think it's just over 2 minutes long, we're actually filming them with them for about 3 hours, just to make sure they're really comfortable. And just even things like asking them questions like, is there anything else you want to say? Or do you feel like you've got your story across? And then editing it obviously in a sensitive way that hits those messages that the charity needs, but also respects that person's story and not using any effects and not using dubbing over them, their voices with different messaging, just letting them tell their story and the impact the charity's had in a really authentic and genuine way. And then I guess at the other end of the scale is a project we're working on at the moment with a national charity, and they have a youth board, which is about 10 young people between the age of 16 and 25, who went to the charity and said, you know, we really want to make a film, but we don't really know what we want that to be. So we've been doing quite a lot of work with them. We've not even started making a film yet, but like a co-creation process. So initially we had a group session with them explaining what co-creation is and how to tell a story together. Mm-hmm. And then we've gone through different stages of what messaging do you want to be communicated? How do you want people to feel? And that's been a group discussion at each stage. And we've kind of coached them through that process. So now we're at the point, actually, in the next few days, we're going to be presenting different ideas to them of what the film can be, and then they will help co-produce it with us. So we'll be filming it, but they'll definitely be dictating, you know, what the messaging is and how they want it to look. And, you know, even things like, we won't be scripting it, but what they want people to be saying in that, and who they want to be talking to. So yeah, but I guess that's kind of very sort of co-created ethical content gathering, because you're very much being led by the people who are featuring in the film, but also they are part of the audience because they use the services. So yeah, as examples, I guess those are two very different kind of ways of gathering authentic content. But I think at the heart of it, it's just really thinking about the people who are being featured and they're, yeah, putting them first.
And how do you and the charities you work with choose the people in those videos or in that content? Is it that kind of you're looking at it from the point of view of who is the audience you want to speak to, and then finding people or candidates that are similar to that audience? Is it kind of a peer-to-peer type kind of situation?
Yeah, I think it's more about the messaging that they want to communicate, because it's a lot of the time, it's, you know, most of the films that we produce with charities are 2 to 3 minutes long, so they need to have a really clear message in it. And that's, we do a lot of work with charities beforehand in refining that, because then there's a temptation to try and say everything that you do, and it's just, no one's going to remember it. You need to just get people to feel something so they then go and find out more. Mm-hmm. So we tend to say, you know, for example, if it was a film that was, they wanted to recruit more volunteers, then we would say, you know, what is that key message? Well, the key message would be, come and volunteer with us, and, you know, this is what the benefit is of it, and this is the difference you'll make. So then we would probably say, right, find us 5 volunteers that would be interested in, you know, being on camera. And that would be probably usually them reaching out to warm contacts or putting a shout out on social media or putting a shout out in their newsletter. And I think most charities are always quite shocked at how many people do actually want to share their stories and do actually want to help the charity. And then we would kind of pre-interview those people just to see if they can bring that messaging to life, if they do understand what is actually happening, and give their consent, but also just to get an idea of what they'd be like on camera. Because I think sometimes you might think, oh, Jane's going to be great on camera, she talks so well, and then you put a camera in front of her and she'll freeze up and hate it. So I think even just having those initial conversations is really helpful, just to see how passionately they can speak about it and how open they are. And even just things like how, you know, the inclination of their tone of voice and those little things. And that we kind of take a few different people, interview them, and then we go back to the charity and say, we think this is the right person to film for this project.
Do charities ever make videos just as kind of stock videos, or are they always, or should they be making videos which are very specifically tailored to a specific audience and a specific appeal? Do they need to know ahead of time? Does it make sense to know ahead of time what that video is going to be used for? Or is it enough just to have a video on their website or on their social media channels, do you think?
I think, yeah, it depends really on the organisation, their budget normally. So I think the smaller charities tend to want to just do a film. If they're going to invest in a film, that film's probably going to need to last them for a few years. And it probably just needs to kind of give a feel, like a montage style, I guess, of everything they do. And that might include some interviews, some B-roll, some footage of service users or beneficiaries. So I think it depends on the organisation and what it's being used for. So what I would always encourage charities to do is, for a campaign, or if there's a specific purpose, really refine that messaging beforehand and just focus on that one thing that you want to do and you want to say. Don't just go out and start gathering content, because you're just going to be wasting time and money on getting stuff that you might not even use or that's relevant. If it's some, like an organization that's that wants to just do like a this is what we do kind of style film, I always try and get them to encourage them to think about how you want your audience to feel. Like the audience could be very broad. It could be funders, it could be service users, it could be volunteers. So you don't really want to make it too specific, but I think that you still need to focus on the impact that you have as an organization. That's really important, and how you want the audience to feel once they've watched it. What action do you want them to take?
Today we're talking about thankathons. What is a thankathon?
I absolutely love thankathons.
Do you?
When I was working in fundraising, I was like, I'm a massive advocate of thankathons. I think so. A thankathon is really is basically just saying thank you to people, but in a way that's kind of you plan it as part of your, this is what we're doing this year, comms fundraising strategy, whatever it becomes part of. But it's really an opportunity for you to say thank you to all the people that make your charity be able to function, and for you to be able to help the people that you help and help you change the world in the way that you want to change the world. I think that it always amazes me how many fundraisers don't speak to their donors, which just blows my mind. I always ask, charities, especially small charities that can have that real personal touch, like how often do you call your donors or have conversations with them? I'm shocked when people say, oh, I've never done that. So I think a thankathon is really an opportunity to build meaningful relationships with your donors. And it can go beyond donors. I've done thankathons. We've already inclu always sorry, also included volunteers, trustees, corporate supporters. It can go beyond donors. I think it's at its core, it's usually a donation, a donor thing. But I think it's building meaningful relationships, and also it gives you a chance to stop chasing new donors and just actually concentrate on the ones you've got, because you'll be amazed at the insight that you get from having conversations with them, and also their capacity to give usually increases, because they might think, oh, actually, this charity made me feel really special. So, and I've actually had this when I've done them. I'm going to stop giving to the five that I give to every month, and I'm just going to focus on this one.
Wow. And so what does it look like, thank God? I'm imagining a big bank of people on the telephone calling all the donors. Is that right? Is that
Yeah, I think it can vary depending on your capacity. Again, I think a lot of small charities think, oh, we can't do that. But I've run them in charities where, they've got five members of staff. So I think there's different ways to do it, and different organizations approach it in different ways. But how I've run them before is you get together a list of all the people that have given in the last, say, 2 years, if you've not done this before, or in the last year, if you're doing this annually, which I would very highly recommend. You make some, I guess, some notes, or you kind of categorize those people, and it could be on, you're just breaking down your, if you haven't already, sort of segmented your donors. So it could be something like they've given more than twice, they increased their gift last time, they're a potential major donor, they are a major donor, they're a regular giver. And then you just kind of split the list up. And then you kind of match that list with the people who are going to be part of the thankathon. So who's going to be thanking? I would always say, don't have the fundraising team do this, because they always hear from you. Really get the buy-in from the rest of the organization. So frontline staff is a brilliant if you can get them involved. Volunteers, trustees, like the other members of staff. So your CEO, your the I guess people higher up in the organization. Match those people. So you have your list of donors, your list of staff, and then you break down the list of donors and match that with the staff. So you might think, well, actually, I know that this donor absolutely loves this part of the work that we do, so I'm going to match them with someone who works in that department so they can talk to them about that. And then I would ask all those frontline staff or whoever's doing the thanking to block out, even if just, 3 hours in one on one day or a week. You can run it on a day, 2 days a week, however works best for your organization. And they just thank them. And that can be phone call, it could be an email, but personalized emails, so no copy and pasting, or a handwritten thank you card. Those work really well. And in fact, the first ever film that I made for a charity was when I was working in a youth homeless charity. And this actually kind of ignited my passion for film, I guess. And it's just on my phone. And it was, I got loads of the young people together and they held up statistics saying, this year we have provided 10,000 nights for young people facing homelessness. And then a few statistics. And then at the end, they all just held up cards saying, and I was one of them, and I was one of them, and I was one of them.
Wow.
Because you wouldn't think that I think the idea that people have of young homeless people is that, you know, they're on the streets, they don't look well, but these just wouldn't, normal young people, normal, you know, in quotation marks, young people. And we sent that out as just, here's a little message for you from some special people. And yeah, we didn't ask for any money, but we got, yes, several very nice donations
And
from it.
I guess that's an important part of it, because I guess I kind of there's in a lot of the charity communications that I receive, and probably I'm sending as well, there's always that hint of, could you make a donation, or more explicit, please can you support this? And I guess in this thankathon we're talking about, it's a case of, I mean, it's names on the tin, isn't it? It's thanking rather than asking.
Yeah, it's really important that there isn't an ask. I mean, sometimes you might be on the phone to a donor and they might say, "Is there anything I can help with at the moment?" So it is good, and I would definitely say have something that you can in your back pocket that you can say, "Well, actually, we've got this project coming up," because of course they want to give, so you need to give them that opportunity. But it's not a donation ask. It's a very much a thanking. But saying that, there is quite a lot of evidence to suggest, and I've found this actually, that if you run a thankathon or you thank, even if it's, you know, not in a thankathon way, at, you know, a month or two before you do an ask, you will get more, the amount you get will increase.
So, I mean, it's worth charities doing it to, I suppose, as part of their retention of supporters, but also potentially as a mechanism of raising more funding as well.
Yeah, so I would always, if I was doing a fundraising strategy, I would always have a thankathon, probably, you know, if you're doing a Christmas campaign, maybe do one in October. So you've got that like a bit of lead in. And yeah, you're just thanking people, updating them on the work, no ask. And say that as well, you know, when you ring them, I'm not cool, I'm not asking you for anything. I just want to say thank you. It's because of you that I can do my job. It's because of you that always try and have a story as well. So I would prep the people who were doing the thanking. Not with a script, but with sort of bullet points. So this is the person. Say thank you. Please have a little story. It doesn't have to be about a service user. It can be about something you've done. And then always, you know, don't ask for a donation. Just say thank you and yeah, wish them well and make notes of anything they say as well, because that's really important information for the fundraising team. So even if they say, oh yeah, you know, I'm just on my way to my son's university graduation. Make a note of it, because the next time the fundraiser picks up the phone, how did the graduation go? And it's all about that relationship building.
From my experience, people shy away from calling people and kind of move to the email as a easier, slightly less stressful approach. But I think if a charity's got permission to contact people, obviously they need to be aware of that. But am I right in thinking that it's probably more effective to actually speak to somebody on the phone?
So much more effective. So much more effective. Firstly, that, well, I mean, I would maybe give them a heads up first and say, are you free for a call next week? Like, you know, so you're not just calling them out the blue. But it's, you just get so much more. People open up more. You can ask them things like, what is it that makes you give to us? Which they're going to answer more openly and honestly without having to prepare it like you would in an email. And again, that's really important information that you can then take to the fundraising team and have as a, you know, these are the reasons people give to us, and this is because we've been told it. I think that I understand it can be, it's speaking on the phone is intimidating, especially if it's someone you've not spoken to before. But these are just people. They love what you do. Like, they're your biggest fans, so they want to hear about the work you're doing and the difference that they're making with their gift. So I think you kind of owe it to them. And yeah, just if it means, you know, you have to go into a room on your own and do it. I know that I used to get nervous doing it in an office full of loads of people, but give yourself a bit of time, and you do one or two and you'll soon realize how lovely it is. And I used to do it sometimes on like a Friday afternoon if I was feeling a bit,
It's a good Friday
deprived.
afternoon job, isn't it? With kind of
Yeah,
low
you just
energy
got a
levels, perks you
rejection
up.
from a, yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. You just got a rejection from a grand, or you didn't get that corporate pitch, and you think, oh, I need to go and speak to someone who loves what we do. Just pick up the phone and say, oh, how are you doing? And just wanted to update. I just wanted to tell you a story about something that I thought you'd like. And it just means so much to people. And having been on the other side and now, giving to charities, you can really tell when you get that personalized thank you, rather than, the copy and paste, your gift is making a difference email.
And do you think charities need to weigh up, because obviously there's a, there's a resource cost to this, unless you can get volunteers to make the calls for you. But if it's staff making the calls, and I suppose there'd be some arguments for doing that because staff might have a better handle on answering certain questions. Do you think charities need to take that on board and think about it in the context of, kind of bluntly, who do we contact that's making a significant enough donation that it should be targeted at mid to major donors? Or is there a kind of also an element to it of thinking how long term some of our supporters are and how worthwhile it would be to spend a bit more time and money on thanking them?
I've mainly worked, I guess, in small and medium-sized charities, and I've always said, thank everybody, because you don't know what their potential to give is, and you don't know what doors they might open for you. It might just be that you give the real those people that you think, oh, these are our like really key supporters, or these I know that they've got potential to give more. So I'm going to give those to that head of a certain project that I know has only got an hour, so I'm going to give them three really important ones. And actually, these ones that have only given twice in the last 6 months and they've only given £10, I'm going to give them to someone else who's got a bit more time, and they could just send them a nice little personalized two-line email. So it's, I think you need to spend it's, I think that the biggest investment in time is organizing that list and organizing the people who is doing the thanking and their time and capacity, but it's really important to get the buy-in from those people. And I think it's going back to that tricky thing of making everyone in the organization think like a fundraiser. And this actually really helps when I've done it, and they've said, oh, it was so nice actually speaking to the people that really support the work I do, and are really interested in what I've got to tell them about these little stories and the people that we help. And if anything, I've found that it's those people that maybe a bit reluctant at the start come back to you and say, when are we doing it next year? Like, they really get a lot from doing it. So yeah, I think it's getting their buy-in at the start, and that needs to be, and you can present that in a way that, we're gonna it's donor retention, and you can, look at all sorts of evidence on why that's important, or the uplift that you might get in a campaign that follows, and also just that, staff retention, because it's bloody tough working in charities. And if you actually get to speak to people that say you're doing an amazing job, thank you, they'll say it back to you. Usually you'll say thank you so much for your gift, and they'll say no, thank you for everything that you're doing.
Emma Brace Girdle, thank you for once again contributing to Charity Chat.
Thank you. Yeah, go forth and thank people.
Big thank you to Emma Brace Girdle for sharing her insights and expertise with us here on Charity Chat. Taking the time to create authentic, co-designed communications is a vital component of any charity seeking to demonstrate their sensitivity to the issues they're grappling with as a part of their mission. Putting the people in your charity videos first, making sure to be aware of their needs and the story, is crucial, and it's a good filter to ensure that the message for your audience is simple, clear, and has a concise call to action. When it comes to Thankathon, saying thank you to people is more than a nice thing to do. It also plays a vital part of any comms and fundraising strategy, and it's far more efficient to keep your supporters than to go out and find new ones. A Thankathon is also an opportunity to say thank you to those you are helping and those who are helping your charity, and explain the impact they're making, and answer any questions and take on feedback to help improve how you do things. Emma said that from her experience, and while not the objective, a thankathon can also result in an uplift in giving from your existing supporters, as well as encouraging them to stay with you and continue their support. Emma had some great tips for how to run a successful Thankathon, which included doing it annually as part of your retention plans, not having the fundraising team do it, and instead having the rest of the organisation involved, such as frontline staff, volunteers and trustees, and to break down your list of donors and list of staff and match up who should contact who. A phone call, a handwritten thank you card, or an email work well, but they have to be bespoke and they have to be specific to that person that you're contacting. And remember that it's really important that there isn't an ask, but it's worth also having a shopping list in case the donor brings it up when you're speaking with them, and to make the most of that opportunity. So thank you, dear listener, for getting this far with us. We hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to enjoy the podcast. We'd love to hear either way. Please do like and subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Plus, share with any colleagues or friends who may be interested. You may have noticed that we've now moved to a monthly episode, but please do keep in touch with us if you'd like to bring any particular topics. We'd love to cover them. And equally, if you'd like to be involved in the podcast, please do get in touch. We're always looking for new volunteers to help us. It's just left for me to thank our corporate sponsors. These are Giant Squid Audio Lab for sponsoring our podcast kit, Magda Axsmith for our beautiful website. Check it out at charitychat.org.uk. And of course, Forrester Fools for playing throughout the show and for playing us out right now. That's it from me. Keep on doing what you can. Speak to you soon. Cheerio. Bye-bye.